The Next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode, Kelsey and I speak to Adam Voss, the CMO of Surreal, a virtual event platform that creates immersive virtual reality experiences. Leveraging technology from the gaming industry, the team at Surreal creates experiences that are, well, surreal. If you thought a virtual event was a bunch of scheduled Zoom calls, prepare to have your mind expanded in this fascinating conversation about the future of interactivity.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on the Next CMO podcast, Adam. Really excited to have you on the call. Would love to learn a little bit more about you and what you do for Surreal.
Well, so glad to be here, Kelsey, and so glad to join, Peter. So Surreal is a first of its kind browser-based virtual platform as a service, kind of like Fortnite for live sports, entertainment, or retail. We provide businesses, brands, integrative agencies, organizations, tool sets, and automation to create immersive multiplayer environments. And in that, we have personalized avatar creator, you know, immersive environments, locomotion, navigation, user interface that's customizable, you know, it's video and voice and text chat, e-commerce, real-time collaboration tools. It's basically, you know, employing video game technology and using it for adjacent applications within business, be it, you know, for business to business or consumer applications, really trying to create rich second screen experiences, as we call them, or digital twins to real life experiences.
Super exciting. And I'm excited to get into this a little bit more, Adam, and explore some of the applications. And we should just encourage people to go to your site. We'll put a link in the show notes, but if they're not handy to people, just tell us what what link they should go to check out Surreal.
It's simple, surrealevents.com.
Cool. So you have to see it, because it is, when I heard about what Adam was doing for the first time, I said, what's this going to be like? And I saw it and I was, wow, totally blown away. So what was interesting to me is that you, Adam, and your team are really defining this future kind of experiences for dealing with, you know, what used to be done in in-person events and sort of hyper in-person. And I suspect that you have a really interesting take on what's going to happen in a post-pandemic world around how people go back and how people employ these kinds of technologies, what works, what doesn't, things like that. So I want to dig in a lot of areas like that, but you have to fill in a little bit of background too, because you also do this really cool 12 by 12 thing. And I'd love you to just share with our audience a little bit about what you've done in that series, because it's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, necessity is really the mother of invention. So, you know, Surreal, for instance, it started because, you know, I was working with an agency based in Chicago called Echelon Design, and we had been doing, you know, live events, activations, trade shows, trying to really tell stories for our clients and help them, you know, to tell their stories. And we realized that, you know, so many of the things that we were learning, we wanted to share. So we created a podcast called 12 for 12. And this was basically a podcast that went deeper into, you know, different functions of design and different functions of marketing, kind of like what you guys are doing. But we decided to go a little step deeper and make it video. And at the time, like, you know, it just adored everything that Anthony Bourdain was doing, and having that kind of, like, you know, live immersive, you know, kind of a walk and talk follow style with really interesting locations that led us to create from an audio podcast only. We did a season of that. And then we started with our first season in 2016 of doing kind of a Bourdain for Brands type show, which I got to host. And, you know, I was like kind of an ex Second City narcissist. I love being on camera and I love to talk and I love to engage with people and find out what makes them tick. You're like, why they're doing it. I mean, everybody's got a cool origin story. Every entrepreneur has like great drama stories, like just the struggle to build something. So it was all about consumer focused brands. And we started our first season in Chicago and we went to, you know, companies like Intelligentsia or my alma mater, the Second City, or, you know, Goose Island Brewery, or, you know, Vosges Chocolate. And we basically look at the people that started it, the product that they really, you know, created the fandom from, the process that is always so, you know, crucial to whatever they're making, and then really the passion that enveloped the whole story, and then how they told the story. So it was, for us, a great way to A, meet people, B, you know, it's this great freemium thing. If you have somebody on your show and say, hey, we're going to spend the money, we're going to send the crews there, we're going to do the edit, we're going to give you a great piece of marketing, then they usually come back and go, oh, wow, we really liked you. We liked what you guys are doing. Would you be interested in doing some work for hire? And that's how the relationship starts. And I think that's how like all relationships should start, because it's like, I'm interested in you. Do you want to date? And you're like, well, let's see. And it's like, well, you're a bad kisser. I don't want to date you. And, you know, but if you do have a bond, you know, not everything works, but if you do, when it does work, we found it worked about 30% of the time. It was amazing. And then we found that even more amazing is if you have that show that you can show a client, a current client or a prospect, then they go, oh, would you white label that for us? So, I mean, we white labeled 12 for 12 for Jones Lang LaSalle, JLL, the big commercial real estate company. We did it for the Waffle House. We did it for Stoller, which is a giant
Waffle House company. And Jones Lang LaSalle are two companies I usually think about in the same breath, by the way. Yeah. And by the way, I'm totally jealous of I'm a high quality production fanboy, and I'll tell our listeners, you got to go check this stuff out because it's just really well done. I'm really jealous that you had the resources and the talent to put together just some really amazing content. And I'm sure that as someone who really appreciates that kind of production value, that must have led into the kind of experiences you were trying to create in virtual worlds. Can you talk about how you went from point A to point B? Because it's obviously it feels like it's related, but it's also just a huge leap forward to go from really great digital editing suites and great talent to a massively sophisticated tech platform that will create virtual worlds for people to participate in instead of events.
Yeah, absolutely. I just for the record, I don't know if talent or resources were part of our equation. It's a mantra that we have that the CEO of Surreal and my partner for the last 7 years, it's make it until you make it. It's not about faking it. It's about the concept of just keep creating. The more you create, the more you'll refine, the more you'll fail, the more you'll learn what works and what doesn't. And that's kind of the story with Surreal. You know, we were in negotiations with NBC Universal to sell 12 for 12. At the same time, you know, we've been doing a lot of live events. I mean, at, you know, CES and Dreamforce and, you know, South by Southwest. And we would also, you know, for Echelon Design, I was running our production hub for videos, be it corporate or commercial. And we started to use the Unreal Engine, which is Epic Games' proprietary software. It's a, you know, this great code that you can basically create these rich, almost photoreal rendered environments. And so we were doing that for clients in the home and lifestyle sector, doing, you know, product room scenes. If you think about, like, you know, your Restoration Hardware catalog, these beautiful room scenes now are mostly computer generated. So, you know, it's so much easier in terms of workflow to create this with Unreal Engine than to get a photographer, get the product, move it in and out. So that's what we started doing as static images. And then we started doing it with dynamics and started doing, you know, studio productions, non-linear video, which was all in Unreal. And that gave us kind of the tools, the technology, and just the know-how to pivot to a virtual event space. Now, this is something we had been talking about in 2019, but the cards really fell in place in, you know, 2020 with the pandemic, really the week of March 9, 2020, shutting down live events as we know them. It was just a watershed change, and we knew that we needed to mobilize. So my partners, Nick Grant, who is our chief product officer, and Josh, who is our CEO, and myself, who is a freshman virgin CMO, we got together and we said, okay, what is this we want to build? What is the roadmap? And we just started working with our team of developers and, again, pulling in the right folks. It was all about finding people, making those relationships, and bringing the best expertise together. And, you know, like Fortnite, we wanted to have kind of that environment where you could do a Travis Scott type concert. I mean, you know, in 11 minutes, he made $20 million. He had, you know, so many folks on the platform wanting to participate. And, you know, we've talked to Epic Games and they're saying, it's like, this is something that needs to be replicated. But at the same time, we were also pivoting to a virtual event space because so many businesses needed to have internal meetings. They needed to have product launches. They needed to connect with customers. So we wanted to create something that was avatar-based, that was browser-based, so you could easily log in. There was no heavy app to download, that was easy to navigate, that the user interface was very much like Teams or Zoom, which kind of are leading kind of that UI. Again, we just made it until we made it, right? So we had our first event was in November of 2020. We officially launched the company in March of 2021. And we went from, you know, this is how fast the cycle is, right? We went from building a virtual event space where it was like, you know, it's templated with, you know, your main hub and your breakout sessions and your plenary sessions and meeting rooms. And we have a virtual food court and we have virtual trade show hall. And you know, it was all about verisimilitude, like convincing the user that although they're looking through a window, they're playing a game. So just kind of like my 16-year-old son was hanging out with his friends, playing Red Dead Redemption and sitting around that, you know, Western campfire and just hanging out. That's the same thing we wanted to do for, you know, the corporate set. So they could actually feel like they were together and we could stream video in there. You know, you could play video, you could sit down at any chair and open up a web chat, just like we're doing right now over Zoom. Having that kind of freedom to choose your own adventure, explore the space. We found that people loved it. But what we found really early on is events are a great annuity, right? So, you know, every year you're going to have CES, you're going to have AWS, but it's a fixed period of time. Like it'll last 3 days or a week, 2 weeks maybe, but then it closes down. Now, if you're going to build a bespoke, customized world for, you know, interaction and transaction, if you could keep it up longer, if it could be an always on experience or a virtual headquarter or training center, we thought, oh my gosh, this is A, going to be a better deal for our customers, B, a revenue generator. So we went from Surreal 1.0, which was really focused on events, B2B and B2C to some extent. But then Surreal 2.0 was all about creating an enriching fan experiences. Like the one thing that we know, and I know you guys know this, that fans build brands. So, you know, that's why like licensing IP, I mean, we did a 12 for 12 on Funko. They license the most IP more than any consumer brand in the world. So it's like, look at Lego. You know, I used to play, I don't know, you guys play Legos, but like Legos used to just be like little toy blocks. But once you start licensing IP, then you get all of these different fan bases coming together and they're wanting to engage with the same product. So that's kind of Surreal 2.0. And then Surreal 3.0, which we're working on now with a capital raise. We're in a Series A investment raise right now, but it's all about automating and creating tool sets so that you guys can do it. There's a game company that is kind of like the paradigm for me. It's called Manticore. And Manticore is basically a company that allows users to create their own video games. Now, how cool is that? It's like YouTube for games.
It's like, think about the Twitch model. So Twitch really took off, and it's funny because what it did is it turned the content creation on the users, and then all of a sudden it goes nuts. And it's really fascinating to me how you've really leveraged learnings from the gamer world. It's incredible to me how advanced the gaming world is compared to everyone else on the planet around some of these technologies, around this hyper-realism, around the performance that you need to be able to achieve the immersiveness and even some of the tools. I mean, the fact that they have these engines and toolkits that they've populated out there to get more people developing on these platforms is amazing. And I'm surprised more people haven't tapped in and applied those constructs that the gamer world has developed and built more business applications on top of them, because it's such a powerful set of assets to start from.
Yeah, I mean, it's happening. We're if you look at the kind of the Zen of where we are right now, it's the rise of omnichannel, right? Everybody's online. Everybody's trying to approach things from every channel. Then you've got the explosive growth of gaming. I mean, you know, Accenture released a paper a month ago that the total available market for video games was north of $300 billion right now. There was a quote that came out this week from another company. I'm trying to remember the market research company, but it was like virtual events are north of $700 billion. You know, Fortune a few months ago said 3D virtual is, you know, 41.58 billion by 2027. So you've got this growth of gaming, especially during the pandemic when people were home and they were online. And gaming is very siloed in terms of the monetization within the game. If you look at like most games and most gamers, they spend about $100 per month in microtransactions. So you know that your clientele for this type of solution, creating a virtual platform or virtual space or digital twin, they need to justify the cost, because, you know, server time is expensive, you know, art creation is expensive. They want to create something that will continually grow and make money. Now, you know, within a gaming environment, you know, you can have ticketed revenue, you could have, you know, NFT sales, you can have, you know, e-commerce from merch to exclusive merchandise drops, you can have food ordering, you can do, you know, player meet and greets if you're with sports teams, or, you know, have influencers in there. There's no limit to what you can do. And, you know, right now, it's just kind of the perfect time. I mean, really, 2020 set us ahead 5 to 7 years in terms of fast forwarding technology to accept these types of virtual platforms. So it is kind of the Wild West. I mean, there are not a lot of companies, like if you Google right now, you know, avatar based virtual platforms, there are not a lot that are doing what we're doing. And to be where we are right now is incredible. I mean, we recently got an Epic mega grant, and Epic has been a big supporter of Surreal. And one of the reasons is, you know, we just are scrappy. You know, it's about just making it. We went really fast. We did a really quick pivot. We got the right people on board. I'm kind of incredulous that we're here right now, because, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, it's about strategy. And for us as producers, it's always been about, you know, execution and execution at speed and quality. You know, you talk about wanting to have a solution that is beautiful, that is artful, that people want to use. And I think that's what we've created.
I think with the Surreal 3.0, one of the things that you've been able to take is the learning lessons of 220 and 221 and just expedite so far. Because I think of one of the, you know, conferences that I went to this year was the big HubSpot conference, you know, around 20,000 people are going normally to this in-person event, and they had to find a way to adapt. They created that avatar experience, but you're taking it to the next level of giving companies that customization, being able to build out that experience that they want their business and their brand to have.
On that note, now peers and I like you the way you described yourself as a virgin CMO. If you think about the CMOs out there, how should they be thinking about their plans for engaging in and participating in what used to be called event thing? I don't even know if you call them events anymore. I before we started the record button, we were talking about the fact that I had a back and forth with a CMO group that I participate in. And a lot of people are asking, are you planning to have your customers go to real-time in-person events anymore? And no one knows the answer. How should CMOs think about event marketing in the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, you know, again, take this with a grain of salt because I am a virgin CMO, but I would definitely say the future is going to be hybrid, .. I don't think we will ever go back to a point where you are required to be 100% live in order to engage with a new client or to make the sale or to, you know, to show what you do. I mean, the technology exists, and we as a species have adapted, I think, pretty deftly to this virtual reality. Now, you know, connecting these Fortnite-like metaversal experiences is really an important thing to look forward to. I mean, I think CMOs now absolutely need to start building in this channel. The metaverse is going to be a slow process. I think we are on to the next level of the internet, right? Where you are going to start engaging more virtually, and you are going to be in, I mean, so like right now we're creating second screen experiences. Like we are creating a way to engage with a brand or a product or a company that's more immersive, that is gamified. It's, again, it's a video game for .. You fill in the blank, but that is going to lead to the next level, which is actually putting you inside the experience. So not looking through the looking glass, but being, you know, inside of it. And that's, again, that fully immersive, being in the screen, you know, VR, haptic interface, Tesla bodysuit, the whole nine yards, like the Ready Player One metaverse.
Or Tron for my age group.
Or Tron, yes, yeah, exactly.
The first Tron, not the
last. Yeah, exactly. The overlords right now are the ones, or the overlords in the future are the ones that start now. So, I mean, that's my first piece of advice. If you haven't invested in, you know, looking into a 3D virtual component to your physical in-person events, start doing that now. The second is really start thinking about, you know, the digital twin in essence of like, What are the properties, or what is the IP that your buyer, your fan is attracted to, and how can you get them into that experience so that they can do it whenever they want, like that kind of always on thing? You know, we have an e-commerce experience we call WeCom, which is basically how can you play a video game with a friend and go shopping with them? How can you have like a differentiated, you know, experience with a customer where you're showing them products that they can interact with in a virtual environment?
Yeah, we in fact, I remember, it must have been in the peak of the pandemic. I can look at my notes here. Maybe it was in April. So I guess we're coming down off things. We had, remember Greg Ryan from Canon, Kelsey, on the podcast, and he works for Canon. And they make these, he worked for the part of Canada that makes these giant devices. And you have to, for them, they were really struggling. How do we think about the virtual trade show kind of thing, when people are used to being able to come up and look and touch at this big machine that we want them to buy that costs $100,000 or whatever it costs. They were thinking at the time about creating these virtual showrooms, and they started to create one on their Canon.com experience. So tell us a little bit about, if you don't make a physical thing, if you're a provider, you're a SaaS software provider like Plana as an example, why should you care about a 3D immersive world experience for your customers? What's the value prop to the marketer and to the customer of that kind of experience?
Yeah, I mean, the game is afoot, right? I mean, it's all about being social first. And for us, just as gaming platforms were developed to play socially, the same is true when it's applied to business. When everything is sales. You know, if you're selling your personal brand or you're selling, you know, your marketing software, and sales is really, I mean, yes, you do need to do the brick and mortar. You need to do, you know, all of the tackling of, like, you know, what's your marketing going to be? What's your strategy going to be? But really it's relationship based. And those are how, you know, that's how you grow your brand, how you grow your business is having relationships. And if you can't travel because of cost or, you know, carbon footprint or pandemics or, you know, coming down the pipe, you've got to figure out a way that you can be socially engaged with your customer and with your product, that you can do demos, you can do launches and releases, you know, in a way that is engaging, that, you know, encourages exploration, that gives your customer a chance to explore your footprint organically. And the first thing that we did was surreal, is like, how can we have accidental collisions? I mean, people play video games. Minecraft, for instance, is all about going in and making stuff and exploring and bumping into people. Well, how can you do that like you do it at a real trade show, or if you do it at a real event? So that's kind of how we engineered our product, was let's let everybody else decide what they want to do. And it's the same kind of with Surreal 3.0. It's like, let's let other people and other businesses figure out what they want to make. We will enable the tools. If you think about Epic Games, they have their Unreal Engine marketplace where you can go in and you can pick different components to put into your environment. Well, that's the same thing we're doing in our space, is creating the ability for other people to create, which is, you know, it's really more empowering. You want to help other people do what they want to do.
Adamet, are you seeing the application for even an internal collaboration at this stage? Because, of course, more and more companies are now permanently at minimum hybrid and sometimes completely virtual. Do you see that? Or is really, do you think the investment at this stage of the market more centered on you know, customer and revenue centric kind of opportunities?
I think so. I mean, at this point right now, we're so early. We are like at the tip of the spear. It's the wild, wild west in terms of what's going to come. In order for companies to make these types of investment, they really do want to see some sort of return on investment. And we've taken that position of, yes, you want to have rich interactions, but you want to turn those interactions into transactions so you can actually create revenue from this platform instead of dump money into it. Now, that said, you know, the events market, for, you know, much of it is not really direct revenue creating. It's, you know, it's creating the long-term benefits of sales, but it's not, you know, it's not transactional. You know, Surreal really serves clients and audiences of all size and scale, and we're meant for any industry. In our verticals right now that we're focusing on are really, you know, sports and fan engagement. So we're engaging with a Major League Baseball team in the South. I can't really tell you which one, but they have an A on their hat. We're doing the event stuff that we still have our
Astros or the Braves both have A's, don't they?
think so. I can't tell you.
You can't say anymore. We were going to get a scoop, the first podcast scoop we ever got, but no. All right.
The first ever. I think retail and consumer experiences were currently going into a partnership. I also can't mention them. That's more of a retail engagement. Automotive, which is great. If you look at, you know, automotive is, it's, they've been at kind of the forefront in terms of visualization, like being able to build your own car online. And now that's kind of, we're going that next direction. We've done a bunch of stuff for Stellantis, which is formerly the auto group, you know, Fiat Chrysler, and they have 14 iconic brands in their constellation. And we're, you know, continuing to help them. Music and entertainment, you know, so many venues have suffered through the pandemic and now want some sort of virtual component, and they have the fan base to do it. Concert promoters as well. I mean, again, I mentioned Travis Scott. The Fortnite folks were approached by several major, major stars, and they want to do that kind of experience. But, you know, Fortnite is its own thing and they don't have the means. So it's like one of the things Surreal wants to do is be, you know, be the door and open up these kind of experiences for other brands. The virtual headquarters thing you mentioned, I think is an interesting thing. I don't think we're quite there in terms of the always on cost of getting these, you know, Amazon Web, you know, G3 and G4 servers running constantly. It's an expensive endeavor, but you know, with that, you can do education and training, and you can do, you know, events through the space. So it's all happening, and there's so much that you can do, and there's so much, much more that I haven't even talked about that you can do, but it's, again, we're at the very beginning.
And do you think that we're going to see, you mentioned that sort of this is the next generation of the web. Do you think we're going to see some major open communities or open-ish kind of communities along with some closed communities? So is there going to be, you know, something analogous to a Facebook or a LinkedIn that is, you know, this broad community that people participate in for these kind of virtual experiences, and then there's something that hangs off them as a group? Or are brands going to have their own specific thing? What's going to be the interconnectedness of these worlds? How do you teleport from one to the other? Or is it just the web? How does that fit together in the future?
That's an amazing question. I mean, I think for us, we would like to be the doorway to all of these different metaversal experiences, so that, you know, you come and you create your avatar, and your avatar has its profile, and you have, you know, your credit card APIs and your social media APIs, and that avatar, which right now is based on the same Fortnite avatar. So you can take your Fortnite avatar into our environments, but then you can travel to different environments, right? So I think the more open source and connected these metaverse experiences are, the better for, you know, everyone, because then you'll be able to go from experience to experience and keep that virtual identity. Just like we all have digital identities now, you know, we have digital wallets, our phones are kind of that, you know, it's a collection point for all of the stuff that we are. I think the next level is having a virtual identity, your avatar, going into different worlds. And I think it'll be a mix of both, to answer your question, Peter. It'll be connected, and I think there'll be, you know, exclusives as well and private. But I think we're gonna benefit by keeping as much connected as we can.
I completely agree that some way to transport between those things are gonna be pretty important. And as you think about these avatars that people create, are people in this kind of environment, is an avatar a rich 3D descriptive version of your profile, or is it a cloak of anonymity, or is it a different persona that you can take from time to time? Is it your Clark Kent and Superman identity? How should we think about the evolution of what the avatar is, and how much does that reflect who you are? Or I go back to, you know, every metaphor in my life, it goes back to The Office. It's Dwight Schrute in the Second Life episode is his ultimate ambition in this fake universe is to be a paper salesman in a second tier market or something like that. Is that what's going to happen? Is it going to be accurate? Are there people going to have this sort of privacy shield, or is it going to be, you're going to have multiple things or something different?
Yeah, it's another great question. It goes back to the name and convention of surreal. I mean, we wanted to create something that was both real and whatever you wanted it to be. I mean, the idea that it can be a one-to-one, that you can use our avatar creator and take a selfie and upload that selfie and have that, create the dynamics of your face. But at the same time, you can go into the body selector and lose 30 pounds or, tan yourself or, it's whatever you want to be. I think it's going to be, again, both. You'll have that veil of anonymity by creating a character that's totally unlike you in real life. So you can go and catfish other avatars, but, you're also probably going to have people that want to keep the continuity of their brand. So they want it to be as one-to-one as possible to promote their thing in the real world. And I think that's the dynamic, is keeping that bridge between the physical and the digital virtual as much, open to interpretation as you can.
I have so many questions here, and I'm sure I'm going to run out of time, and I haven't let Kelsey get a word in edgewise. But one thing I was going to ask you about was skeuomorphism, and in this world, you mentioned as an example the idea that you should be able to go to the food court at the event, which to me is like the world's worst experience. Are you going to use haptics to have like that sticky tile kind of feel when you go through that disgusting food court and those awful smells? So how important is it to fully replicate the experience of an event versus just taking the best parts or creating things that are impossible in a typical three-dimensional world?
Wow. Yeah. With the gaming stuff, I mean, we're at like spatial audio, so we're like, if I'm close to your avatar, and I walk away, my voice will diminish like it would in real life. We haven't really got to smell-o-vision yet. But I think that kind of sensory composition perspective is really important. I mean, again, like even, Mr. Sweeney from Epic Games, he's like that Ready Player One paradigm is at least 50 years off. I don't know. I mean, again, the more users we get, the more it will, necessitate these kind of upgrades to the metaverse. I mean, right now, our primary demo is in a large part the early adopter gamer. It's really funny. We did an event last month and we had to train all of the trainers who were doing the event. And they were mostly, Gen Xers like myself and baby boomers, but the users were all Gen Z, So these are all interns and they came in and no one needed any explanation. There was no need to show them how to locomote or how to teleport or how to use the map. It was just amazing just watching these people. Cause I was like, wow, I mean, I am definitely more of a Luddite than I am a gamer. And I'm working for a company that's building virtual platforms. I just thought it was so telling. I'm sure, Peter, you've got to have that same experience. You're just like, well, I don't think there's going to be an explanation for the future because they're so used to the concepts.
Yeah, I do often. I'm at the point in my life where I relate to the Steve Buscemi, how do you do fellow kids meme?
Right.
Because I feel like I'm now the old fart in the room all the time. And all right, one more question, and I'm going to let Kelsey ask a question. And we're actually, I could keep on going for a long time here, but we have limited time. And if we have anyone left listening after the time we're done, thank you, by the way, for staying on, because I'm entertained, which is the primary reason for doing this podcast, by the way.
Absolutely.
But the question I was going to ask, just to bring it to the really practical and tactical for the CMOs out there, is this feels like what mobile marketing was before mobile marketing really existed. Sure. Or it feels like what the web was before the web existed, or very, very early days. And this is clearly going to be a critical kind of modality for people to be able to market into and with. And as you, I think, aptly brought up, it's been accelerated by 5 years or so by the pandemic, which has forced people to think about this much faster, this capital flooding into this market to help accelerate people like you at Surreal. And so how should they start? Give me a concrete thing that a CMO should do to learn and think about what they should be doing in this space so they're not caught flat-footed.
First and foremost, number one, create a hybrid event strategy. Focus on what you want to achieve and give yourself reasonable, tenable deadlines to achieve those things. Investigate platforms, do your due diligence, know your audience base. There are four generations of workers currently in the workforce today. Know which of those generations are your audience set. If you don't believe using a game like ours, a platform like Unreal Engine to go in and engage your customers will work because they're all in their mid-60s, definitely figure out a different, you know, I would say more of a web broadcasting based solution. I mean, you know, there are really several different ways to get in front of your customers virtually right now. There's the web conferencing, there's like Zooms and Team kind of thing. There's the web broadcasting, there's, you know, ON24, Touchcast. But if you want to use an avatar based, you know, reality and do something that's more gamified, you know, check out what we're doing. Number two, I would say if you don't have a strategy and, you know, you don't know where to start with a strategy, I would start attending as many virtual webinars or conferences as you can. Like, you know, the Virtual Event Institute, for instance, is doing stuff all the time. I know, I think Ben Chodor from Entrada was speaking at one tomorrow. Learn, just go out and just learn and listen. I think that's probably number one before number two, create the strategy. And three, I think it would be rinse and repeat. Try different things because so many people had to pivot in 2020. So many people had to learn new things in 2020 and technology has accelerated so much from, you know, March of 2020 to, you know, now July of 2021. So it's okay to fail, just fail fast and move to the next thing and figure out kind of what works and what doesn't.
Well, I have to say, Adam, my mind has been blown for this conversation so far. And I'm just thinking in my head of the avatars I'm going to create, you know, the settings I'm going to do of real customized virtual experience. But I guess the last question we'll ask you is, you know, what advice besides, you know, creating that hybrid event strategy would you give to aspiring CMOs or CMOs today?
Don't wait. I mean, this hybrid is the future. Start building in this channel now. Again, even if it's baby steps, you are going to be left behind unless you get started today. Mm. I mean, that's really, I think that's the lesson learned. This is a new channel that will extend your reach and extend the potential of your market. And it's funny, even since we started late 2019, I mean, there are a dozen fast followers behind us. So, you know, it's not about, you know, who's first to market, it's about who's best to market. And, you know, we're in kind of a pole position now and we see the wolves at the door and we're
competition.
Yeah, of course, which is great. And there, you know, that's the other thing about this space is that there's so much room for competition. Hmm. And there really is so much money in the marketplace right now. It's amazing that this is kind of the time to invest and to start looking at virtual as a potential way to meet your clients and customers.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Adam. I really appreciate our conversation. Make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Thanks, Adam. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.